Hey, welcome back to the Good Music Show. You are now listening to part two of the Track One's playlist episode. We had decided to split it into two because we definitely talked for a bit longer than we expected, but we didn't want to cut anything because we were talking about too much gold, you know? So please be sure to enjoy part two and be sure to listen to it after part one. Don't listen to them backwards because you're going to be all confused. Be like, where's 1 to 5? You know, you're going to be all fucking confused and stuff. But just as with part one, you can find the links to the playlist in the description of whatever platform you're on. And yeah, enjoy. Thanks for listening. So yeah, back to me, we got Sign of the Times by Prince, where similar to like Danny trying to figure out like what Willie Nelson song to throw on this, like Prince has always been like a huge, huge artist to me, especially because my mom and dad, huge Prince fans. They fucking love him to death, you know, and like Prince, he has like every album of his that I've had the chance to hear, it always starts off strong. The guy knows how to start off an album. And like, you know, you go with the easy one of just Purple Rain, Let's Go Crazy, Hello, Dearly Beloved, like, you know, classic. Yeah. I've always been, especially where it plays in this, in the playlist I made, I was really excited to throw Sign of the Times there after Down the Street, just because Sign of the Times, it's like the opposite of what you expect from a Prince song. Like, it has a groove to it. It has a nice beat to it. But if you want to dance to, you're going to be looking kind of crazy, you know, because it's very like strung out. It's about like addiction, Reaganism, like a lot of like the times, like it's literally the title, like the times are changing and they're fucking like not looking too good, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's a song that I think is very spectacular, like showing that, where like one of my favorite lines ever, which I think finishes off the second verse. Just want to bring up the lyrics real quick so I can get it right. In September, my cousin tried reefer for the very first time. Now he's doing horse. It's June. And like, with Down the Street, especially because like, it's very much like, it's like Iggy's like a beast. He's like a fucking animal on the prowl. The lyrics aren't vivid. The lyrics aren't detailed. And Prince's lyrics, they're always like, you know, brilliantly written. They're always painting the right picture and stuff. But with this one, it feels like he's directly speaking to the listener of just like, this shit is fucking weird. And he's able to like tell a complete story, just like how I like shared an example in just those two lines, you know? And yeah, what'd you think of it, Danny? What was your Sign of the Times experience?
Yeah. I mean, well, just another line that kind of goes, we're saying how it goes, let's fall in love, get married, have a baby. We'll call him Nate if it's a boy, you know?
Yeah.
I really, really like this one. And I know some Prince. I know mostly Purple Rain and, you know, the other big hits. But yeah, he's definitely one that I haven't listened to his full albums, really. And I have heard that some of them are shaky.
Well, like he's made so many.
I mean, everyone's going to have some misses.
Well, what's funny is like, I don't know what my mom would say. I have to ask her about it. But my dad has always said all of them are good. And that's how I know he was like, if my dad was born in 1999, he would be a stan. He wouldn't have had kids. He would be like sending death threats to Prince haters in Twitter. And like
the pee hive.
The purple hive.
Yeah.
But like where he'll say that, and I have not checked out every Prince album. I would love to one day as a project, like I do now, be fine.
You should do that with some. Have you done that with anyone?
Yeah, reasonable discographies.
You need an unreasonable one. unreasonable one. Because I did that with Willie.
Yeah, and like Prince will be that for me.
We're talking 150 plus. I haven't listened to all of them, just the ones on streaming. So like probably 130.
Yeah, exactly. It's like I know that he has like a big one, and like it's definitely like, you know, with Prince, like I've only heard ones that I've liked so far. I haven't heard a Prince album yet where I'm like, what the fuck is this guy thinking?
Yeah.
And it's because like I so far I've checked out the ones that my mom and dad have like recommended to me as like their favorites and stuff. Mm-hmm. And some of them are shaky. Sound of Times, though, which is like probably my favorite one. And it's like his, like, I think he had a couple between this one and Purple Rain. So it's not at all a direct response to that, like, fame and stuff. But it is like a departure because, like, he disbanded The Revolution, which was his band for a few albums from Purple Rain and a couple after. And he went back to just, you know, being his like, I do everything myself. Because, you know, everyone's favorite thing is like a musician who's self-made, does everything on his own, doesn't need any help. Individualism will fix our society. You know, that whole fucking mindset where Prince, because of how damn good he is, he pulls it off so well here, where it's an album that feels like it's has a bit of a like sweet system where every like song feels like a doorway into a whole different vibe. And it somehow still like works cohesively so well. And the intro, it sets the tone of just like, you know, this guy's going to challenge what you're expecting from a Prince record. And it has dancey tracks on it, but even the dancey tracks are very like off-putting and stuff. Where my favorite song on it is this track, If I Was Your Girlfriend, which like Prince is a very religious man. He's very chaotic. He makes like Prince is not a straightforward story when it comes to like pop stars, where something I think that's funny is that, you know, with the way he dressed, he's very effeminate. He like definitely plays around with gender and a lot of his music. The guy is reportedly a huge homophobe. Like he was never down with that. And where he even got pissed at a girlfriend of his for being bi. But like, that's what kind of like makes it even weirder and interesting, where he has songs like If I Was Your Girlfriend, where he's basically kind of like making a song that's incidentally kind of about being a trans woman in a way, where it's a fascinating album, especially for the time that it came out. And I feel like it was really fun to like have this song here at this spot, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. I definitely like this one. It's very addicting to listen to, and with that, the kind of loop machine that he used to make it. Sampling like, synthesizer, I guess it's called.
It was controversial, I believe, when it came out for him to like use the drum machine as much as he did on this record, which like is very like the forefront for this song, especially.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I can do that on GarageBand too, but you know, so it's not really a huge deal to someone like me. No, but yeah, I definitely would say, I mean, no, I didn't want to bring up like that. He has bad albums. I mean, of course, like, I mean, anyone who like goes for it is going to miss sometimes.
If you make more than 10 albums, at some point they have to start being bad.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, just like he's definitely a big blind spot for me. So hopefully in the future we can get some of his albums, talk about him. Because I definitely like when he did the Super Bowl, that was a big one for me. I really liked that. And I was just going to say, I recently saw that clip of him doing the press conference before the Super Bowl where he was like, all right, the floor is open for questions. And then he just, as soon as someone starts to ask, he immediately just like goes into a song, like, you know, so like just that kind of like, like you said, there's like all sorts of like stories about him just being eclectic to say.
Oh, so. Yeah. You'll never get a straightforward story of him. I still think one of the funniest stories, not to do too many Prince stories, but was it Michael Jackson? He wanted the song Bad, he originally envisioned it as a duet with Prince. I think it was either Michael Jackson or Quincy Jones who wanted it to be that. And then supposedly Prince, the only thing he said to them was like, so the first song is Your Butt Is Mine. Who is saying that and who are you saying it to? It's like, motherfucker, you're wearing a purple bodysuit, leotard. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I'm not trying to say anything, but I'm just like, what the fuck? Like, it's the last person you would expect to be thinking that and to be confronting someone like that, you know, where it's like, it's amusing just because you think you would know this guy because of how he presents himself, but it's not at all easy to understand. Mm-hmm. Where there's even another funny clip of him and Quincy Jones where, Quincy Jones is on stage doing We Are the World with all these fucking singers, and Prince is refusing to sing where he's just on stage eating a lollipop. And Quincy Jones literally tries to hand the mic to Prince to sing, and instead Prince gives his lollipop to Quince, say, huh? Where it's the guy's a character. He's like, he's something else.
Yeah. All right, so we switch back to me.
We got Cover Me Up by Jason Isbell.
Yeah.
Which this was real fun to check out because this is like my first time ever hearing a song by him, at least knowingly, because like I said, I could fucking heard any of his like hit because he's popular, right? Like, let me see how many listens he has. Yeah, so like this is like the first Jason Isbell song I've heard. Like, it's not really that popular. I was expecting to be bigger, but it's like he has about 600,000 monthly listeners. Not that matters, but it's like context to like help you decide, like, have I what I've heard this guy incidentally or whatever. Because I've always heard his name. I've always known of him as like a star or whatever. But but this one was really cool. Like I love like just similar to even like Sweet Revenge. Like an incredible opening line that just like sets the tone of like it being like this weird paranoid sense of like something's coming for you and you just want to hide from it with your lady or something. And it builds on that vibe just throughout, where it's real strong, vivid songwriting with just real great instrumentation to build upon it as well. Because like before this, I've only ever known him as a musician, of course, but also like the really creepy husband and one of the many creepy husbands in Killers of the Flower Moon.
Yeah.
Which is really great in if people haven't seen that yet.
Yeah. So I mean, I would say like he's pretty huge in the scene that likes him. Like he does, he's doing like very big shows and even like co-headlining in stadiums like this summer. He's very popular. I'd say a lot of his fans are definitely the type to buy the album, you know, like, so the streaming numbers might be a little skewed in that way.
It's never views and which people don't understand, not to cut you off, but like, which people don't understand, especially people who don't want to do the actual research. Views and listeners are rarely ever an indicator if something actually is popular or not.
Yeah, I mean, he's got...
It rarely actually is.
He's got rabid, like, real intense fans. I would include myself in one of them. But he's also, like, unassuming enough to where he could probably walk down the street and not get, you know, harassed or accosted too much. You know, like, the average person might not know who he is. You know, you might even just know his Twitter personality more than his musical stuff. But yeah, this song, you know, like this is one I've known for a while, I've loved for a while, and it's really like come a long way. Like I don't know if you've experienced this, where a song where it just changes over time, or maybe it just like I actually figured out what he was talking about over time.
Yeah, what is he talking about in this?
Yeah, it's a very personal song. It's a very There's a lot into it, you know, and part of it, you know, you can learn from watching. He's got a documentary on HBO Max that talks about the making of his album that came out in 2020, released during COVID and stuff. And he's been through this is the first album he made after getting sober. Very severe alcoholism that he was dealing with. To the point where, you know, he went to rehab and came out and made this album. And it was the album that basically broke him as, you know, what he is today. And, you know, people look at him as like the best songwriter currently, in that world. Like whatever you want to call it, country, Americana, folk, whatever. I mean, he's really rocking
he pulls it off. And it's just like it's very much one where like you may be trying to do something while you're listening to music, but once you start paying attention to like how strong and distinct the lines are, you start being as attentive to it as you would as if you're reading a book. Like every word points right at your fucking noggin, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And for the longest time, I just really liked the melody and the overall like kind of structure of the song. And of course, there's like the line, swore off that stuff forever this time. That's basically like a ritual now. Every time he plays in a concert, the crowd goes nuts and cheers, you know, because he's sober, you know, like it's a big accomplishment.
Hell yeah. Which great to see a fan base that supports that. I can't imagine how many people who always say Eminem should try drugs again. Where like regardless of wherever it lines up for an artist and the story of the quality for their records and stuff, you have to be happy when an artist is able to discover sobriety.
Yeah.
Because music, like any other art form, is full of like artists who are gone way too soon because of their addictions.
Yeah, exactly. Know?
Yeah.
But yeah, honestly, so when I started to actually figure out what he was talking about, like the kind of key to unlocking it for me was the song Cover Me by Bruce Springsteen, which obviously inspired the title. And Cover Me is a euphemism for having sex. So like I didn't really think about that song in this way, but as soon as that was unlocked, I'm like, oh my God, like I can't not, like this song is like literally like, you know, use me for good, you know, like it's like finding that comfort in this like moment of passion. That being said, and you know, I'm not trying to, you know, parse through people's personal lives or whatever. but it does affect when you learn certain things, it does affect how you view the song. And knowing that his wife at the time, Amanda Shires, who's an incredible artist, like we're going to talk about one of her albums on the show at some point, like I can guarantee that. Mm-hmm. But like to know, like she played fiddle in his band, and to know that like hearing this song was painful for her because of certain lines that came from real life things. Like, you know, like the line that goes, "Put your faith to the test when I tore off your dress." I mean, like, to imagine having to relive like the moments of, you know, because they were together during the peak yeah. of his, the struggle with alcoholism. So mm-hmm. it just adds like so much weight to the song that like, it's already like a very epic song. And, you know, listening to it live, it just seems every time I've seen him a few times in concert, and every single time that song, it just like builds. And like at the end, he's like screaming, and the drummer is going on like the tom drums, like boom, 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 you know? Mm-hmm. So it's a really like incredible experience to hear live. Just to mm-hmm. know that like all that went into it, it's a deep whatever it is. I mean, it's you know,
yeah.
again, like without trying to dive into people's personal lives, but you can't help but think of these things once you learn them. But
yeah, no, definitely. I mean, like, because similar to bringing your own personal experiences to how you like perceive music and stuff, it's always kind of like, especially if the artist is open to it as well, It can be a key to like understanding their work, to like understand what the hell they're going through when they're making the thing, you yeah. know, which is like why I'm someone who's like, there's the danger of like people building parasocial relationships, which that is a dangerous thing. Like, I don't care if you was trying to like normalize and be like, well, they are my mom. No, right. Beyonce's not your mom.
Yeah. Yeah.
Grow up, call your actual mom if you like her. You don't call your mom if you don't like her. But anyway. But no, but like it can matter, especially in music, because like a lot of people are like singing their own confessions, you know, which right. is like, to even go back to Willie, like it's which I'm excited to learn about when we talk about the album, is knowing like what stuff of his are like covers and what stuff is written by other people, because it is easy to just assume like, you know, a singer is like singing from their own, like, you know,
yeah,
book of like stories and stuff.
Especially when they're selling it really well, like great artists yeah. too, yeah.
When like art really ever has to like come from the source, it's just like performing, you know, stories travel and stories have to be told by everyone.
Right.
And it's great when it's personal and it's great when it's not personal.
Yeah.
But it's especially great when you bring something personal to someone's own thing, which, I mean, the classic example is I Will Always Love You by Dolly Parton being covered by Whitney Houston, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. which... What's even crazy for that one is that was the soundtrack for a movie that no one talks about anymore, which no offense to any Bodyguard fans out there. I just don't know. No one's told me to watch The Bodyguard. I want to check it out.
Yeah.
No one's told me to, despite one of the biggest songs ever was made for it, you know? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm kind of getting off track.
That's yeah. right. But yeah, yeah. So that's that one. Do you want to switch back to you?
Yeah. So with Cover Me Up, I would love to have a supermodel cover me up. We got supermodel by SZA. Her the first song on Control, which is her second album. Do you want to start this one off?
Sure. Yeah. This album, like I remember listening to it like around the time it came out, and I've liked it. Mm-hmm. You know, and SOS, the follow up to it, was really good as well.
Oh yeah, like that one, I was so shocked that she pulled it off again. I'm just used to like when an artist blows up, the fucking fame and hype can really fuck it up. And that one, I felt like, I mean, it's getting off topic, but like that record has so much great music on it. Well, I'm very grateful for waiting that long for it.
Yeah, and it just proves like how, well, I just really like the fact that she's so popular, because
yeah.
she's very different. Her songwriting is really great. And
yeah,
you know, like she lets you know that she's a good songwriter right from the beginning, when the first line is, "I'm mm-hmm. writing this letter to let you know," and then the rest of the song comes. So like, just thinking about that in the context mm-hmm. of a handwritten letter is really cool, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, no, and like the way she sings it is like just fucking incredible, where I'll never forget, like, because this album has a fascinating history, like, not to get too off topic from the song itself, but like with Control, like this album, like it because like SZA been like making stuff since like the early 2010s, and like Control, she still wasn't like, you know, the star she is now, where no one really expected it to be that huge. Because when it first came out, I remember I was trying to like put people on it. I was sending Supermodel to people. I was sending Drew Barrymore to people. And people were just like, why is she singing like that? Why is she singing like she sings in cursive? And it's a singing style that like can be, it can catch you off guard at first, but like it's very, very distinct, where like it has like such a great like style to it. And we were talking about the songwriting on it. One of my favorite moments, like if any like song, is looking up the lyrics again. I really need a, I get why on podcasts they have like people who just Google stuff.
Yeah.
I get that. Well, yeah, no, but like I love the like, let me tell you a secret. I've been secretly banging your homeboy, which it creates, because like you're already hearing a like a story where you're like, this person is heartbroken. This person is like, you know, feeling like lesser than themselves. But then it brings such a like, you know, twist to like what the hell this character's deal is, you know?
Let me tell you a secret. I've been secretly banging your homeboy while you in Vegas on that bomb Valentine's Day. Why am I so easy to forget?
Where the song, it takes a whole new shift, a whole new shape after that line, where I feel like SZA is a great songwriter because like she's fully aware of like how to play with the listener's expectations of whoever the song is dealing with, where she doesn't do much like storytelling, of course, but like it's something else. Like it's just great.
Yeah. I mean, I think like the song itself, like the, you know, like the chorus and stuff, the is very timeless. And it just made me think that like, you know, with a little bit of digging, I could probably find, like, cause I'm always like wondering like what certain, like if I were to show this song to like a country fan who likes like old school, like 50s, stuff like that, I could find probably 10 songs that have the exact same message or like, you know, like story that this song tells, like from like the 50s and 80s or whatever. Like I'm thinking like Loretta Lynn, Patsy Cline, the horniest Conway Twitter or the horniest Conway Twitty song. Because yeah, like, but like the thing is like those songs may have like one line is the whole story of that song, but this song has like 10 lines that could be a different country song, you know? So
yeah. And it gives like the story a bunch of twists where you can't help but be enraptured and like want to like dive deeper into what the hell this like character is telling. Cause like the character could be SZA. The character could just be someone omniscient who we don't really need to know the name of his stuff, where it's such a like breathtaking way to begin an album, in my opinion, because it's such a strong story with such strong songwriting and a beat that like isn't necessarily minimal, but like it builds and it gives the space for like her singing to like lead it.
Right. And then the drums coming in and kind of like putting an emphasis on the last chorus.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Like it's a killer track, which like I'm glad I like you're into as well. And like it, I feel like, continues the vibe that like Sign of the Times is already like kind of building, but making it like a bit more personal. Because I've never fucked somebody's homeboy, but I'll sing every line on this song. Like I got rent due.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a hell of a track.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Where it's no surprise that it ended up like finding its audience, ended up like building a fame for her, you know, which she fully deserves. And it's like let get in the way of like her talent at all. And not that it does, but it just does happen. Like sometimes when someone blows up, it loses the oomph, the like hunger that like can be found in the songwriting specifically.
Yeah. I mean, I would point to anyone who's like, there's no good pop music anymore. Like, have you listened to SZA? You know, that's what I would point
to. SZA.
Yeah.
Literally. Like get past the curse of singing if it upsets you or whatever. Cause I never understood that take. Like if a motherfucker, if it sounds good, it sounds good. Yeah. I don't care if it sounds like a font or something, you know?
Right, right.
So if you like your supermodels, well, we got some old man trouble for you. My oldest ready.
Transition to that title is why it's not. It's a little bit of a stretch. But no, like you know, again, this is just one of those ones that speak for itself. You know, like the build up of it is just, you know, pure, like I would say Hollywood, classic Hollywood style cinema, like that.
Yeah,
the building up of the band, and then like, you know, I'll say Otis Redding is definitely a newer artist to me, but like every single song, like just one of those vocalists that just grabs you and shakes you with how good he is.
It's a tremendous intro because like it immediately cuts straight to the point. It wastes no fucking time at all to like let you know this guy is one of the best singers out there. Mm-hmm. And the story, well, I think it's so funny with Otis Redding to me is I feel like if Otis was having a good day, they wouldn't let him sing that day because he always sounded like he was in pain.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And not in like a painful way to listen to, but just like the emotion, like it was strong. It's like this motherfucker really needs this trouble to get away from his ass, you know?
Yeah.
And it's an expressive like way of singing that I think is what made him stand out in an era full of incredible soul singers, you know?
Right. Yeah. And the crazy thing too was learning that like how young he was when he died. He sounds like he lived multiple lifetimes in just the few years that he was on this mm-hmm. earth. It's just great. And it kind of reminds me, like, it's not like a one for one comparison, but it makes me think of Takeoff, who one of my favorite rappers, you know, of Migos, how he was tragically taken away. But when you hear his raps, even the early days, he sounded like someone who has been around. Like, this is not his first lifetime, it sounds like, you know.
I thought he was the oldest one when I first heard
him. He's the youngest.
I thought Quavo was the youngest, but no, he was the baby of the group, which is what makes even more tragic. But just like showcase, like there are some artists who just like you give them the mic and it's already there. You don't need to fucking do any more work because mm-hmm. they'll just bring everything that life already gave them and leave it all on the floor.
Yeah.
And Otis Redding is like no exception, where this song is a great, great showcase. And it's a great album. Like Otis Blue is probably like my favorite of his records, which once again, which due to his short life, he didn't have too many, mm-hmm. but this one's great.
Yeah.
And it's a great intro.
Yeah. And he kind of takes back the white guy rock and roll. Like he does the Rolling Stones cover mm-hmm. and shows that, you know, he can do all of it, you know?
Oh, this is Rolling Stones?
Yeah. I think it's Can't Get No Satisfaction on Otis Blue.
Oh yeah. 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 I forgot about that.
And he does a couple other like classics, like A Change Is Gonna Come. And, mm-hmm. my favorite, probably I've Been Loving You Too Long, which actually Jason Isbell did a very, very serviceable cover of that because he put out an album of covers of Georgia artists. Mm-hmm. Like he promised, like if Georgia, you know, turned blue for one of the elections, I can't remember, probably 2020, he would do a cover of Georgia artists, you know. So he's got
no fucking politics. Can you stop talking about fucking politics?
Yeah.
We are not a political fucking show. I am so pissed right now.
Trust me.
I'm joking.
No, you're right. You're right. But
it's cool. It's cool that he did that. Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And was that song in The Sopranos too? I've Been Loving You Too Long.
Yeah, I think it was, yeah. And I don't know, is Otis's version, is that the one that's on the Twin Peaks to Return? When, I forget his name, but Big Ed, when he finally goes to get Norma. Not Norma, but the lady at the diner.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know it's the Otis Redding song, but I can't remember if it's that one or not. Yeah, it's a live version. It's not the version of Otis Blue, but it's a live version.
Yeah, yeah.
But which that's just like one of the greatest covers ever.
Yeah.
Insane. But yeah, where Otis was very exceptional, like most soul singers in that era, where they weren't writing the songs, but they were singing it so damn good, you just assume mm-hmm. this is theirs, and, you know, it was like changing hands.
I mean, he did write too, you know, too. He did the Dock of the Bay and Old Man Trouble he wrote. Mm-hmm. So it's always great when you can effortlessly go between like, you know, even popular classics mm-hmm. like My Girl, you know?
Yeah, because that's the thing with like, Not to go too deep into like the context here, but like I need to stop saying not to get too deep. Just do it. But anyway,
I'll cut that out.
Hey, thank you. Please cut out 60% of what I say over and over again. But like with the way the record industry seemed to work back then, because I haven't like read too much on it, but I can assume just from listening to stuff from that era and from the documentaries I've got to see, is that the covers were either like the artist wanted to do it, or it was just because it's an easy way to sell the record, because like people just love hearing that fucking thing, especially when a singer throws their whole spin onto it, where Otis was very much like special in that he could like do the cover and do his original as well, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. All right. Well, we want to switch over to Lost Ones.
Yeah. Yeah. We got Miss Lauryn Hill with Lost Ones. Yeah, like this is like the last song I added that ended up here. But yeah, where Lost Ones, like I've always like loved this song just because like it's straight up rapping. I think I only have a few rap songs in it. Like, and this one's probably like the most like lyrically focused one. And Lauryn Hill, I mean, say what you want about her as a person, say what you want about her as an artist. Modern wise, but when it was the 90s, it was like a motherfucker fell to earth, because mm-hmm. I have no idea how someone could like rap this good, and also similar to SZA, be one of the biggest artists in the world. Mm-hmm. Because like this album won Album of the Year. It's one of the few, like, I would never say it's a rap album because it has like a lot of soul, a lot of R&B if you want to like throw categories on it. But it like won Album of the Year at the Grammys, which is like usually the worst award to win because not that many good things win it personally. But it like shows like how much talent there was to like take in when it came to her, because like it's sensational stuff, especially from like some of her perspective, which like is generally like a lot of the songs on this album were breakup songs, and Lost Ones is no example, where it's kind of funny to hear like a braggadocious rap track that isn't dealing about like, oh, I sold the most drugs, mm-hmm. or I killed the most people, or I have the best clothes, where it's just like, no, motherfucker, like it said in the title, you lost one, you lost the best one.
Yeah.
You know? And like it's a sick track. It is long, where I forgot that it's like 5 minutes and 30 seconds until like I listened to it with the playlist myself. Yeah. But how did you feel? What's your thoughts?
I really like this one as well. And I haven't listened to the whole album. This is one of the ones where like I was like, oh, I got to just keep going. I want to listen to the rest because, it's definitely big blind spot. I mean, this is one that, you know, it's probably like it's an album that's in the Rolling Stone list of greatest albums of all time. Mm-hmm. So it's gotten a lot of praise for good reason, it sounds like, because I really like the thing at the end, which I imagine it kind of like goes into the full concept.
Oh, yeah, like as a skit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's something I forget about this album a lot, is that it has like, I mean, a lot of 90s rap albums had concepts and skits, which, hot take, I'm one of few fans who missed those because it made the rappers were always so expressive and so inspired by movies that they loved, where it was always cool to see them create their own films mm-hmm. through the music itself, which Wu-Tang it did in their own way through using like movie samples itself. And Lauryn Hill was one of many who just practically had casts reading out lines written by somebody, you know?
Yeah.
Where this is an intro that I wish I remembered. If I remembered, I would have took it off. It has a skit at the end that makes it going into the next song even funnier, yeah. To be honest.
I really like the how the chorus builds to where like the mm-hmm. at the end there's just like someone saying one, and it kind of like it's like bouncing around, making it really chaotic.
Mm-hmm. It's a very like fun song about something that's not that like cool to really like throw into a record, of just being like that mad about a breakup, mm-hmm. where you're like, motherfucker, I am it though.
Yeah.
Despite we don't fucking know the other guy's story, he's not gonna make a song, you know.
Well,
fuck him. Who is he?
Based on which song came out on top, I think we could tell whose side to pick.
Exactly. We could move over to back to Danny with No Regular Dog by Kelsey Walden.
Yeah, Kelsey Walden. Yeah, I'm curious what you thought of this one, because this is, I would say, like a selection that kind of shows what I'm really interested in with current artists, like progressing the genre of, you know, of what country is and what it sounds like. So I'm curious what you thought.
Yeah, like I like this one a lot, where it didn't, I'll be honest, it didn't stand out too much to me, where I wish I gave it a bit more listens because I don't have too many notes, but I do just... I love a lot of the like just distinct writing on it, mm-hmm. and the vibe that it's carrying, where I don't have too much to say, but I definitely want to check it out a bit more on its own.
Yeah. I mean, I think the album came out in 2022. It was definitely one of my mm-hmm. favorites. And this song in particular, just that opening kind of fiddle groove is really good. And, mm-hmm. and they knew how good it was because they made it like a reprise at the end. Like the last song is the outro that just kind of repeats that thumping rhythm with the fiddle. Mm-hmm. And
It gets real stuck in your head.
Yeah. And, you know, like the album itself is really good. And this song kind of talks about the honest truth of like what it's like to be a touring musician. You know, because like sometimes it sucks, you know, you're, you know, just singing in front of people and they're just staring at you and you got to go through all that work just to, you know, sing a few songs or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I really like how it embraces and just like Kelsey Walden in general is really good at, you know, commenting on society as well. Like, especially being from Kentucky, talking about like the opioid crisis and stuff like that. And I'll say it's produced by Shooter Jennings, who is the son of Waylon Jennings, like, you know, like the legendary outlaw, but friends with Willie. And he's done a lot of his own music too, but I've really liked his work as a producer because He's definitely a huge music nerd, and he's really good at making a clean sound that's very layered and textured. There's a couple recent examples that come to mind that I think are really good. So, but yeah, that's about all I had about No Regular Dog.
Definitely a good one that I do want to check out more of. Yeah, we can go back to mine. We got Thought It Was a Drought by Future. Do you mind starting this one
off? Yeah, sure. Yeah, this is the one, like I said, I had it on my list, but I ended up cutting it. It was a difficult choice, but I think it was probably one of the first actually that I thought of despite ending up cutting it, but for track ones, like first songs, because I mean, this Dirty Sprite 2, DS2 is just front to back, just really, really solid. And the production is, you know, Metro Boomin, like really stands out for me as like some of his best stuff. Like it's one of those ones, you want to hit play on the next song because it's I Serve the Bass. And that beat is so good. Like,
yeah, it's insane.
But
that's still like probably my favorite Metro Boomin beat.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, just that opening kind of build up with, you know, where he's, you know, cracking open the Sprite and, you know, breaking the seal or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's just like that's something that's really stayed with me in my brain. It's very, very haunting, you know.
Oh, yeah. No, it's a great use of sound design, which I think a lot of people take for granted with Future's albums. Yeah. Like, especially without Metro. Metro was executive producer on this album. He worked with like a great team of guys, like Sonny Digital's all over it, Southside's all over it. Like most of the great songs on here, their whole vibe is to set the tone. Mm-hmm. And this song is no exception, especially with just the first line being as like explicit and grimy as it is, where you're just like, yeah, no, we're at the deep. We're not getting any deeper than this. We are like on lean. We are awful people. Let's fucking get lit.
And the fact that like I saw a video of him saying like, I literally just did this and then went to the studio and like just told it exactly how it happened. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah, no. And like, and I love Future as a songwriter in that way, because it I'm not someone who needs my rappers to like live the life they live. Like even right now, there's a lot of like people giving artists we just talked about earlier, Freddie Gibbs trash for people say, Freddie Gibbs is a gangster rapper, but he's not that gangster. And it's like, this isn't wrestling, this is music. Yeah. And not that wrestling is an art in its own way, but like it's we need to like accept that like context is key.
Yeah.
And if the music is fucking good, the music is fucking good. Because I've listened to songs by actual murderers and a lot some of it does suck.
The whole authenticity thing comes up in country a lot too. Cause it's kind of silly to say like, oh, they're authentic. Well, what does that mean? Like, it's all just a show. Like they're going up on a stage and trying to entertain you. That's the number one job.
It's performance.
Exactly. So like, why does it have to be authentic? Like, why can't it just be, you know, good or not good? You know, like, and what works about it? What doesn't work? You know? And Future, like,
exactly.
A lot of his lyrics, like, I don't really want to dig too deep into them because of like the darkness that lingers behind, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. No, where like his shit is like, what I love about his music, which I feel like Iggy Pop and Lou Reed for other artists on the playlist, like pull off with their like drug drenched music, is that it's like the music is fun to listen to and the music could definitely be like fucking exciting to check out. But like it definitely harbors a vibe of being a warning of like, this is where it leads to. And this is where it comes to where like it may be cool to listen to now, but it's still like for me, when I hear this track, I'm just like, yeah, this shit's lit, but man, I hope I never fucking feel like this where I have to make a song where this is the vibe, you know what I mean? And like, and Future is no exception, which like I was even talking earlier about how Manny Fresh and Juvenile were on an incredible run. Lil Wayne was on an incredible run. Dirty Sprite 2 is a special record because it was like at the end of like his run of dropping Beast Mode 1, 56 Nights, and I forgot Monster was before Beast Mode 1. Where Dirty Sprite 2 was like the encapsulation of like this revelatory like run of making great trap tapes that like throw the ugliness in the forefront rather than hiding it behind the jewelry and the glamour and stuff.
Yeah.
Cause Young Jeezy's great, Gucci Mane's great, T.I. is great, is musicians, not people. but Future is so interesting in that he is a guy who can do what they're doing, but it's not scared at all to make a song that like is makes you flinch. You're like, fucking Christ, I would never want to think of that shit. You know?
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, yeah, great song. Definitely one of my all-time favorites. My Futures.
Oh, yeah, and particularly. And typically, you know, if you listen to a lot of Future, it'll leave you wordless. And it must have been something I have in a morning jacket because we got wordless chorus on Danny's playlist.
Yeah.
Yeah, which I like this one a lot. I don't think I've heard much Morning Jacket. It's not a band that I could have heard without realizing. But this stuff is like when did this come out? Like, what year was this?
Well, early 2000s.
Yeah.
Let's see. 2005. Yeah,
no, because it reminds me of a lot of like good rock or like just indie music of that era, of just like really like nice quiche, like great vocals, which I love nothing more than like a clever title, because like, you know, the chorus is just doing like, oh, singing, you know, vocalizing and everything, and like where it's really nice. It's a good vibe where I really want to check out more of their stuff now after hearing this one.
Yeah, I would say this album is probably my favorite from them. Mm-hmm. And it's also one of those sentimental ones because my dad bought the CD for it. And like, I would look through his CD collections. And one time in like Spanish class, our teacher was like, yeah, if you have a CD or something you want to bring in to play while we do work, you know, go ahead and do that. So I brought this CD in and I just remember like the teacher like looking at it and being like, huh, I don't know what this is, but I like the art, you know? But yeah, this song too, it's just like, you know, I like My Morning Jacket because they're very jammy, but this song is a little bit more kind of structured, almost like programmed in a way. And it's the first album with their current drummer, Patrick Callahan, who he's a really great drummer and does kind of that double bass thing. Like if you could hear that in the chorus, like, you know, like the more I listened to it too, like in preparation, like the more like I picked up on these little like sound design things that they added too. Like in the beginning, there's like an alarm clock that like goes off, like, to the beat and stuff like that. So and then just that chorus itself, you know, that's why they named the song about the chorus, because it's really like transcendent in like how they go from like quieter groove to like just full blast, like immersing in sound, you know. So
it's a really great build up, and like it's a song that I wish I knew so much earlier in my life, because I could imagine myself I spent a lot of time, especially growing up, listening to music on the train to like school or to work, where this is like a song I felt like I would have listened to hundreds of times just on the train, looking out the window, seeing the city pass me by and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? I actually, I used this song, like a live version that I downloaded from like archive.org. It was like an experimental film project in school. So I used this song like the, basically the,
I was going to say, yeah, like this, like feels like something that could be in a really good film. Yeah. Like obviously maybe the start of it, but yeah, where it just like it has all those good kinks to it, where it's great to visualize too. Right.
Perfect for those like old iTunes visualizers. Put this song on and then watch the screen, just, or you know, a Dan Flash's shirt would work pretty good with it too.
Yeah. Hell yeah. Yeah, it does. Let's get back to my list. We'll finish it off on my list with Wise Blood's A Lot's Gonna Change, the first song on Titanic Rising. And Wise Blood is like an artist who I'm really excited about. Like, she just kind of came out of nowhere, where Rate Your Music was where I first noticed her album, like getting a lot of high ratings. I have no idea what box to really throw her music into, because it is very like just it has like, you know, orchestra strings and a lot of things going into it where it's very atmospheric. Yeah. But like it definitely fits very like singer-songwriter, because like the lyrics that she has are very vivid, they're very haunting. It creates like a really great mood, and she's a stunning singer. Yeah. Where if you haven't had a chance to like see her Tiny Desk, don't pause again.
Yeah, just don't finish pause. You've used up your free skips.
you got your pause out of the way. But check out her Tiny Desk. Like, she has an incredible voice, and it's like very much an immediate thing you'll see on this song.
Right.
Where I thought it was a really nice thing to like cap off this playlist with, of just like something that's a bit hopeful, but also like very like aware of like, you know, the changing of everything, you know.
Yeah, what I was gonna say about it too, because I did listen to the album. I think either you recommended it to me, or I figured out that you liked it by because you posted it or whatever.
Yeah.
But
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I was just going to say, like, I, for the sake of like keeping things interesting, I wish I had a song on this list that you gave me that I didn't like, just because it'd be like, oh, well, but no, is this one, like, you know, I listened to it and maybe I didn't like fully pay attention to what was going on, but each time I listened to it, it got sweeter and sweeter. And it does require your full attention. And to think about it in terms of like what the album itself is about, because like the cover, like I kind of make the connection in revisiting this. Cause yeah, like I said, I listened to the album a while ago and I liked it, but it just didn't really like grab me or anything because I probably wasn't just paying attention enough. But to connect the cover of like a young girl in her like childhood bedroom to be to this song, which is, opens the album and is basically telling your younger self, like, it, you know, it's going to be all right. You know, things are going to change, but you're going to have to just accept that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, that's part of like this, you know, just the fun of this, the show in general is that like actually sitting down and listening stuff and writing about it, you're like, things open up in a big way. So,
yeah, no, definitely. And it's a massive track. Yeah. It really like
it's very refined and sophisticated.
As it goes into it, you're just going to be shook. Yeah. And like just how much it like creates a world into it.
But it's very cinematic too. It kind of made me think of like Frank Sinatra in a way of like how his stuff had these like huge orchestras that like literally sounded like what was put into movies, like those orchestras.
Oh yeah. Like it has that classic wall of sound that we mentioned earlier, Spector like really revolutionized in that era, where her stuff reminds me a lot specifically of like less definitely on like multiple melodies, but like Brian Wilson even, where there's not like much like dual melodies going, but just like the like depth that is going into of it. It's really like something to like hear. Right.
Yeah, and it's impressive to achieve that scale like in modern times, you know, like
And not making it sound corny because like it's not that like people aren't doing it now, but like it this really like makes it sound like timeless in a
way.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, listening to it makes you feel like you're the main character in that movie that it's kind of creating with the music.
Yeah, you hear that TikTok? If you ever want to like, you know, make your comment writing feel more thrilling, put on some Wise Blood
and
put on a good music show.
And to shout out on a connection that I made through it, the co-producer, Jonathan Rado. If you like this album or Wise Blood, you should check out Diane Coffey, who's a artist that you and I met, remember back in the day in college.
Yeah.
But it's got that, I would say it's more of like, kind of like more radio poppy Diane Coffey's music, but it's still got that like kind of chamber style of like old time, like not old timey, but like just classic pop, I would say, and a modern twist.
Oh yeah, like it sounds big.
Yeah,
you know.
So I'll definitely shout that out, Diane Coffey.
Shout out Diane Coffey. That was such a
sick day. The connection was that Jonathan Rado was in a band, Foxygen, or I think that band still exists. But Diane Coffey, Sean Fleming behind Diane Coffey was in Foxygen. So that's the connection.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So we can switch to my last one if you're good with that.
No, we're skipping it.
All right. Yeah, we're out of tape.
But no, like this one I really dug a lot. Where is this a cover? Sorry, we didn't introduce it. Let the Mermaids Flirt With Me by Logan Ledger.
So it's not a cover, but it does borrow the name of a song from Mississippi John Hurt, who wrote a song very similar.
Because this was one I Googled because of how much I really liked the like very brief, but still very emotive writing in it, where I was curious of that because I saw that song showed up first, where I had to type his name after.
Yeah, and he's one of those ones that are like, again, like progressing the genre of like what country is, and he's got sounds of like, you know, reminiscent of Roy Orbison. So like the early rock stuff. And he's even got
real blue eyes type shit.
And some even some bluegrass influence. He's a really great guitar player. He can play bluegrass, like, you know, hold up with the best of them. But yeah, obviously what drew me immediately was his voice and the kind of vibes that he has. He's got two albums out. Yeah. This is the first song on the first album, it's self-titled.
Which, like, even with that, because I don't know why, like, I was really prepping myself to not like it just because I whenever anyone names a song after themselves and they make the cover black and white, I'm like, oh, you fucking bitch. But, like,
yeah.
But no, this guy is sick. I am excited to check out this album as well, just off of, like, how much I like this intro.
Yeah, it was produced by T-Bone Burnett, who did, like, Oh Brother, We're Out There, all the music on it. And
one of my favorite soundtracks.
Yeah, a bunch of other classic soundtracks. And he's a great producer as well. It was one of those ones where, like, he wanted to do it, not like Logan Ledger asked him, you know, which is, it's really cool. Just, you know, proving, like, again, Logan Ledger's second album was also produced by Shooter Jennings. Yeah, with this song in particular, it's got, like, you know, kind of the same kind of theme as the original Mississippi John Hurt song. And if you don't know Mississippi John Hurt, he's like, you know, like old blues guy, but different than a lot of blues artists because his songs sound very happy and he plays like fingerstyle guitar and they're very melody based rather than like the kind of like typical what you'd think of like 12 bar blues or whatever. And just the lyrics in these songs, like they really make you feel like, you know, you want to be in that sea with the mermaids, like when you die, you know, like it make, you know, it just, you kind of float through the song. It's got this really nice jazzy groove. In a way to go back to Mississippi John Hurt, like it's really interesting how happy the song sounds when he's talking about death. And it almost like similar to how, like, you know, African spirituals are, where these are songs that were singing by people like going through the hardest thing imaginable. But they had these songs of hope that got them through it.
Yeah, because, like, that's why I was curious it was a cover or not, just because, like, it feels like something that people would, like an old shanty, you know, those
things.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially with the sea references. I mean, if heaven is anything like what he describes in this song, I would say sign me up, because it sounds really nice to just be floating around in the ocean.
Yeah, and not have to worry about your skin being dry at all, fucking wrinkly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, well, I think that wraps things up.
Yeah, no, hell yeah. First good music show, first track ones. We are going to have these playlists available on Spotify. Hopefully, we can figure out how to get them on to other apps. But if you don't, you can, like, still access the link. And I believe with free Spotify, you can still play it, right? Just you can't play it in the order or some shit, or how's it work?
Yeah, they add in their own songs, but we'll make it available in some way, you know, in the description. Mm-hmm. Just check out the list of songs. You can either find them your own way, or we'll have some help for you to listen along, because I think these are definitely, you know, like, not to toot my own horn, I think my playlist is pretty good, but Julius, your playlist is especially fun and I had fun talking about all these songs with you.
Yeah, no, this is great. And I'm excited to do more of these. And
check out our next episode. We'll tease it here. It's like we did earlier. It's going to be about Tupac's All Eyes on Me.
And Redheaded Stranger by Willie Nelson. Sentimental albums. So be ready for the tears.
That's right. We're going to cry and post a video of it with dramatic piano music accompanying it.
Black and white. Yep. <It's just> like,
All right. Before we go here, just want to plug our social media. Feel free to give us a follow over at Instagram at the GMS Pod. Also on TikTok at the GMS Pod and Twitter at the GMS Pod. And send us an email, thegmspod@gmail.com. If you'd like to give us any suggestions, let us know your feedback on the show. If you have any thing you want to share, feel free to send us an email. We'll leave that open and look forward to hearing from you.
And on whatever platform you're listening to this podcast on, be sure to leave us 5 stars if you really like what we're saying. And even if you just like us, you know, and you didn't like the episode, just do it, because it helps us and it will help you by being able to say, hey, I listened to a 5-star podcast. I did this. This is my doing.
Yeah, not many people can say they listen to a 5-star podcast, so.
Not many. Like, you know, so many podcasts are 4.8, 4.9, but this is the first 5-star one.
Yeah, this is the first one. Yeah, thank you for that.